Hey, it's Dr. Trek, Larry Nemechek, coming at you straight out of Portal 47. And you're listening to the Shuttle Pod. Oh, I see what you did there.
Welcome back, everyone. We're excited here for our newest episode of the Shuttle Pod. This is episode 26, our Errand of Mercy episode. And now, my name is Jared Whitley. I'm hosting this. I am with my good friends and colleagues, Brian Drew.
Hey there, everybody.
And the fearless leader of Trek Movie, Editor-in-Chief Kayla Iacovino.
Hey, everyone.
How are you two doing?
I am splendid.
Not bad.
That's good to hear.
Yep, adjusting to the New World Order, but okay.
Yeah, you know, something that's interesting about whenever there's a New World Order is, you know, the politicians, they give a lot of speeches to try to inspire people, motivate people, demonize people they don't like, right, people they're running against. And something I always wish is that there were a politician who could really set a fire under people, somebody who was really perhaps the greatest speaker in the galaxy. Someone like, I don't know, Jean-Luc Picard, maybe?
How's that?
Is that a pretty good segue to start things off?
Smooth.
What are we talking about today, Jared?
Well, yeah. I'm glad you asked, Kayla. See, the thing that always is kind of weird about this, you know, podcasts or YouTube videos or whatever is people can see the title, right? There's no surprises. Anyone who clicked on this probably knows more about what we're going to say at this point than we know that we're going to say. But yeah, what we're doing today is we thought it'd be a good idea to go through some classic Picard speeches and see which ones are some of our favorites. It looks like we've isolated five or six of them that we're going to go into today. What we'll do is we'll play an excerpt of that speech, and then we will dissect it. So I guess unless we have any other ado, any other items to discuss, we can go launch right into the first one. Anything on your guys' end?
I'm good.
Yeah, let's jump right in.
Okay, so the first one we want to talk about comes from Menage a Trois, which I think is one of the most cleverly titled episodes of all of Star Trek. And what we have here is Lwaxana and Deanna and Riker have been captured by the Ferengi, and Picard has to come up with a way to rescue Lwaxana. And she's kind of baiting him, where she's like, I'm going to make you fight for me, right? And Picard gives this awesome diatribe. And it's one of those great ways I love about Star Trek where the climax is the leader finding a nonviolent way to resolve the solution. And so let's play it for you.
In faith, I do not love thee with mine eyes, for they in thee a thousand errors see, but 'tis my heart that loves what they despise, who, in despite of view, art pleased to dote. Shall I compare thee to a summer's day? Thou art more lovely and more temperate.
All right, so what do we think about that? Pretty good speech, huh?
It's one of the more amusing moments of Jean-Luc Picard, probably during, of the entire series.
Oh, he's easily.
Patrick just sells it so well.
Yeah.
He lays it on so thick.
It's like you could tell that Picard, Patrick Stewart was happy to be able to read Shakespeare on the set of The Next Generation. I think that probably made him pretty happy.
Oh, completely. Yeah. And the thing I love is how awkwardly he starts. And it's like,
right?
There's that line in Galaxy Quest, it doesn't take a great actor to recognize a bad one. And it's like this, it takes an exceptional actor to pretend to act badly, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, totally.
But then once he gets into it, it's just like he's raining fire from above down on this guy with the way he's able to run these off.
Yeah. And it's funny because, like, you can tell Picard's like, oh, shit, I'm going to have to, like, play act this, aren't I?
Yeah.
Like, you can tell. You can see it in his face. But as soon as he flips the switch, man, it is just awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. He goes straight to Warp 9.
Yep.
I think this one, I have to say, I think the Menage a Trois speech is probably going to be, you know, which one of these things is not like the other.
Yep.
Just because, you know, classic Picard speeches are sort of empowering and patriotic and, you know, emboldening of the human spirit and all this stuff. And this one's a more comical thing, but it's a great... It definitely falls on the list of best Picard speeches because of the whole setup throughout that episode. And then just seeing Picard sort of squirm a little bit and then, just dive into full-on Shakespeare. It's pretty awesome.
It's also a good way, because this is not a Picard episode, right? This is a Riker and Deanna episode. And then there's a bit where, like, Wesley saves the day because he comes up, he figures out that Riker has hidden this secret message in the sort of background noise that they're picking up from the Ferengi ship. So we got a lot of Riker stuff, a lot of Deanna and Loxana stuff, then we have some Wesley stuff. And so, but it's nice to end with the captain so that he gets some stuff in this episode as well. So it's a good ensemble piece as an episode.
Yeah, and then of course the dynamic between Loxana and Captain Picard is a fan favorite.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, you wouldn't think necessarily that Patrick Stewart and Majel Barrett would have such great chemistry together, but they really did from the moment Loxana first appeared on the show to her last episode. Like, they just totally clicked.
Well, and I think it also helped that she's this wasn't unusual for her. She'd been on the bridge of the Enterprise since before it even started, right? Since 1965. So if there's anyone who would be comfortable on that set, it would be her.
True, true.
Now, so I used to live in Washington, D.C., and every year they do a Shakespeare's birthday at the Folger Shakespeare Library. And I went there this year, and they did like an open mic where you could go up and recite any Shakespeare speech you wanted to. And so I went up, and I did one of the sonnets, I think it's Sonnet 147, that Picard quotes, where he mentions in here. Mm-hmm. My love is a fever which longeth still for that which longer nurseth the disease, and it went over very well. So, and I was glad that I could try to channel a little bit of JLP.
Nice. There's your little Trek-nick dote right up front.
Oh, there it is. Yeah. Thank you. Well, I'm glad someone was paying attention for that. Alrighty. Moving on to the next one. Next one is a little bit more serious than flirting with Loxana Troi and threatening a Ferengi daemon. Okay, so Kayla, what's the next one?
All right, so the next one we got is one, a more classic Picard speech. Definitely one of the tops. The speech that he gives to Wesley in First Duty, which is of course the episode where Wesley was at the academy and him and his sort of flying pilot buddies decided to do a maneuver that had been outlawed at the academy because it was a very dangerous maneuver that had resulted in people's deaths. And he had gone, they all decided to, you know, not quite tell the truth about what happened that day so that they wouldn't get their leader in trouble. And, you know, Picard basically calls him in his office and is like, a lie by omission is still a lie. Mm. And if you can't, you know, live up to all of the principles that Starfleet is based upon, then... You know, he says famously, you don't deserve to wear that uniform.
Yeah.
So yeah, well, here's the biggest chewing out probably of Wesley's life.
Yeah, I would not want to be on the receiving end of Picard's stern fist like this the way Wesley is. Well, here, let's play it for our fans now.
Do you remember the first day you came aboard this ship? Your mother brought you on the bridge.
Yes, sir.
You even sat in my chair. I was annoyed. Presumptuous child playing on my ship. But I never forgot how you already knew every control, every display. You behaved as though you belonged on the bridge. And then later, when I decided to make you an acting ensign, I was convinced you could be an outstanding officer. And I never questioned that conviction. Until now. The first duty of every Starfleet officer is to the truth, whether it's scientific truth or historical truth or personal truth. It is the guiding principle on which Starfleet is based. Now, if you can't find it within yourself to stand up and tell the truth about what happened, you don't deserve to wear that uniform. I'm going to make this simple for you, Mr. Crusher. Either you come forward and tell Admiral Brand what really took place, or I will.
So, yeah, now my favorite line that I love in there is, the first duty of every Starfleet officer is to the truth, whether it is scientific truth or historical truth or personal truth. What a great line.
Yeah, that's mine too.
Yeah.
It is. As much as I view this as a great speech, I was amazed at the time when I was watching this to see Picard absolutely chew Wesley out. Like, he's hard on him.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And on a show that didn't typically get aggressive character to character, it was quite shocking to see, actually.
Yeah, he even said, you know, I never questioned the idea that you would be an outstanding officer until today.
Until today.
Yeah, okay. I mean, those are hard words.
Yeah. Well, and
hard words. It's a very memorable moment.
It's also because in this episode leading up to it, Picard is bent over backwards for Wesley. He says he's one of our own. Let's do everything we can to help him. You know, of course he's innocent, and right. So, you know, Picard's good faith has been mistreated, right? And Wesley didn't come and confess this. Geordi and Data figured this out, right? And so there's mm-hmm. no reason for him to be happy with this turn of events.
I have to say. Every time I listen to this speech, I can only think of the version that has been made into a song. Were you about to bring this up?
I was not going to bring it up, but I was thinking it too. Yeah. You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
That uniform, yeah, exactly. Because the cadence is so perfect.
Oh, I haven't heard this, guys.
Yeah, we should find a clip of it and play it, because it's really cool.
Yeah, let's find a clip of it. I'll throw it on at the end.
Making a note. Yeah, I was thinking about that as well. Because they build it out so it's got this really rhythmic meter, I guess would be the way you describe it.
I think it's the Picard song by Dark Materia. I think that's the one where he says it starts out with, "Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet." And then it goes into this like techno beat.
Yeah.
Well, I have to hear this.
Yeah. All right, I'm looking for it.
How the hell did I miss that?
Yeah, I got this. Yep, I got it.
Cool.
Yeah, okay. Now, the other thing about this is I feel like this speech and this scene gets a callback in Wesley's last episode, The Journey's End, the one with the Indians where it looks like they're going to have to move them because of the Cardassian Treaty. And Wesley comes mm-hmm. in and chews Picard out, and he basically, I don't want to say it's necessarily Wesley's revenge for this speech, but it's his saying, "You told me to do what's right, and now I'm going to tell you to do what's right."
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys remember that.
I do.
But I thought that was, and they didn't explicitly call it out as saying this is a callback, but I'm pretty sure that's what the feeling they wanted to give is this is the bookend to the other bookend.
Sure. Which, what a great character development arc over that long period of time. You know, both characters really changed so much.
Sure. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Over the course of the show.
Yeah, no, this not only is this one of the best Picard speeches, but I think this is the best Wesley episode.
I would agree with that. Yeah,
probably.
Also, of course, I have to mention this is the episode that basically gave us Tom Paris. If not.
True, yeah.
That's right. Robert Duncan McNeil.
Yeah, yep. Not in name. Anyway, well, there you go. The first duty, first Tom Paris, all that kind of stuff. All right. Well, moving on to the next one. Okay, now I love this one. This is my favorite one. This is one I insisted on talking about. This is actually from not as exceptional episode as the two we've mentioned mm-hmm. already. But I think this is one of the best instances of Patrick Stewart's acting. This is from A Matter of Time. This is where we've got the swindler who says he's from the future. He's actually from the past, and he comes. And he and Picard have mm-hmm. this speech about sort of philosophy and self-determination. And let's play it now.
How can you be comfortable watching people die?
Let me put it to you this way. If I were to tell you that none of those people died, you'd easily conclude that you tried your solution and it succeeded. So you'd confidently try again. No harm in that. But what if I were to tell you they all died? What then? Obviously, you'd decide not to make the same mistake twice. Now, what if one of those people grew up...
Yes, Professor, I know. What if one of those lives I saved down there is a child who grows up to be the next Adolf Hitler? Or can't sing? Every first-year philosophy student has been asked that question since the earliest wormholes were discovered, but this is not a class in temporal logic. It's not theoretical, it's not hypothetical, it's real. Surely you see that.
I see it all too well.
A person's life, their future, hinges on each of a thousand choices. Living is making choices.
So, pretty good speech there, huh? Picard mm-hmm. having this grandiose philosophical discussion with a time traveler. Now, the part that I wanted to focus in on the most is here where he says, where he talks about, what if that child grows up to be the next Adolf Hitler or Khan Singh? And the thing that I love about this is Patrick Stewart is such a great actor that he can list one of history's greatest monsters and a fictional character who, to him, Picard, mm-hmm. is also one of history's greatest monsters, and you don't even blink at it. I think if anyone else said it, it might almost be, and the term that's coming to my mind is blasphemous. I mean, like, you wouldn't say, you know, if Batman said, what if it's Adolf Hitler or the Joker or whatever, and I don't think it would sound as well, but with this, like, he just owns it. So I love, A, the gravitas of the actor, and B, that the writer of the screenplay, who I believe is Rick Berman, thought to include that bit of continuity. I absolutely love that.
Mm-hmm. Which is a little surprising for Rick Berman, since he tried to avoid any references to the original series as much as possible.
Yep. Yeah. So kudos.
So it is cool. It is cool.
Yeah. It's great on multiple levels. Well, anyway, what do you guys think of this speech?
I guess I'm mixed. I have mixed feelings when I'm listening to it. Not about, like, it's a great speech, but it's because I know what happens in the episode. You know, which ends up that this guy who says he's from the future isn't really from the future.
Yeah, total charlatan.
And here he is acting all like, you know, like he knows more than Picard. And I'm just like, that makes me cringe because actually he's just some loser.
Yeah.
And here, it's funny you should say that, Kayla, because I was thinking the same thing when I was rewatching it.
Yeah.
And listening to it again, that it's almost like a dishonest conversation they're having, because Picard's trying to be earnest with this man and this man is not being earnest with him. Like, there's no honesty there.
No, not at all. It's almost as though the Picard speech is being wasted on this swindler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, now something that I hadn't known it before, but when Robin Williams died, I learned it, is that this role, which was played by, I think his name is Matt Frewer, he was Max Headroom, there was the thought that it would have been given to Robin Williams, and that he would have cameoed as in this episode, or guest starred in this episode as the time traveler. How do we think that might have changed the character of the speech to have this world famous comedian opposite Picard for this?
Would have been amazing.
Yeah,
it would have been pretty cool.
And because Robin was such a charming actor, I think the fact that the guy was a charlatan kind of might have been a little more enjoyable that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
He might have been more of a rogue and less of a bad guy. I don't know.
Yeah.
But Robin was supposed to play the role, and he ended up deciding to do Hook with Spielberg, and that's why he didn't do it.
But that's such a great reason, because Hook is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
really
okay.
You think so?
I love Hook. You guys don't love Hook?
Yes, I love Hook.
It's so good. I love that movie. I grew up with that movie.
I'm sorry. I only laughed because of the dead silence there for a
second. Sorry. It's one of those movies that I never saw as a kid, and so I could never appreciate it the way someone could if they saw it. Okay, it's like Top Gun.
Yeah, I used to watch it all the time when I was a kid.
Yeah, you were the right age for it, Kayla.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah.
So I was already like in fact, my first year of college when Hook came out.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It was kind of like uneven. I thought the movie was kind of uneven.
Yeah, I definitely...
It's got an amazing cast.
I definitely didn't watch it from the standpoint of, like, you know, analyzing it as a film. I was pretty young when it came out. Yeah, I was a kid.
Right, exactly. That's what I said. It's perfect.
I totally enjoyed it. I love that movie.
Good.
Interesting. Yeah, well, you know, he got to Robin Williams, instead of getting to face off one great actor playing a famous captain, he got to square off against another great actor playing a famous captain in Dustin Hoffman's Captain Hook.
Yep. Yep.
Alrighty. Well, move on to the next one.
Yeah, let's.
Okay. Because
the next one is another fan favorite, I think.
Yeah.
A fan favorite and probably a cultural iconic kind of a speech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kayla, why don't you set it up for us?
Okay, so we are talking about one of my favorites, one of my favorite Picard speeches, which is the speech that he gives in First Contact.
Yes.
This is, of course, the speech where he's talking with Lily, I guess it's his ready room, yeah.
Yep,
it's the ready room.
It's the ready room. And, you know, where he gives this great speech and he yells and then he breaks his little ships. That's the one.
Yeah, let's play it.
I will not sacrifice the Enterprise. We've made too many compromises already, too many retreats. They invade our space and we fall back. They assimilate entire worlds and we fall back. Not again. The line must be drawn here. This far, no farther. I will make them pay for what they've done.
I like how you mentioned the little ships, because that's how Lily refers to them.
Yeah, she says you broke your little ships.
Exactly, yep. Yeah. And in the Star Trek
card game... Which is a great line.
Oh, sorry. In the Star Trek card game, there was a specific card called Your Little Ships.
Oh, no way. That's awesome.
Yeah. That's funny. But yeah, this is a classic speech. Classic Picard speech. Made even more notable by the fact that Picard is so unhinged when he's giving it.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's an interesting twist because, like Jared was saying, he's so persuasive and he's, you know, even I think as the audience watching him and knowing that, you know, he's coming from the wrong place and that he's making the wrong decision, I still feel like you're almost persuaded by his argument.
Mm-hmm.
When he says, you know, and we fall back and we fall back and the line must be drawn here. You know, and then he goes off the rails and says, when he says, and I will make them pay for what they've done.
Yeah.
And then you're like, all right, Picard, you've gone too far.
He goes full Ahab. Yeah,
he does. Yeah. But I also love this, the way that scene plays out, because I think it's got just the perfect amount of levity, but it still comes across like it's a really powerful scene, because Lily is sort of the comedic effect in that speech where you're just, oh, you break your little ships, and she says the thing about, oh, Ahab's got to go hunt his whale, and then as she's leaving, Picard starts quoting Moby Dick.
Yeah.
And she's like, what? And he's like, it's Moby Dick, and she goes, actually, I never read it.
I never read it.
So I'm like, that's me. That's totally what I would do.
Yeah, that was a good moment to humanize Lily there, who.
And it brings a little bit of levity to a very serious thing.
Yeah,
it doesn't take away from it. Yeah.
Now, okay, so something that in terms of Picard becoming unhinged. I mean, there's a couple instances in the series where, you know, Picard has gone through some kind of therapy with Deanna, no doubt, maybe some others. It sounds like he's recovered from the Borg. He doesn't, you know, have any trauma from it. But in this, sort of all that rage comes back. Do we feel like that fits with his general character arc? Should he have still been this angry 6 years later? Does that make sense, or is it maybe a little bit too much?
I didn't buy into him being this obsessed.
Yeah, I think it's like, well, we talked about this when we did our deep dive into First Contact podcast episode, and it's, yeah, you know, Picard, like, I think we decided there that Picard on film is very different than Picard during the television series. They're kind of two different characters.
Yeah, the way he behaves in the movie works well within the context of the movie, because you need a motivation, but I feel like in the larger mythology of the Star Trek franchise, it actually makes almost no sense.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
I agree. It's still a great speech, though, for movie Picard.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't tell you how popular that speech was when the movie came out. Everybody was doing that. The line must be drawn here.
This far, no father.
No father.
It's also sometimes lines like this are just trailer bait. And I remember that this was in the trailer, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
But it still works within the context of the movie. The way some trailer
lines don't.
To the point, there's some trailer bait lines that don't make it into the actual film. Like, I remember a couple lines in Nemesis that were meant to sound, for the Nemesis trailer, that were meant to sound all Hollywood-y. And then I watched the movie and I'm like, huh, they didn't include that in there. I guess that's just...
How funny.
Make it sound more interesting. Yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes they have every intention of putting this stuff in the movie, but, you know, when you're editing, sometimes stuff has to come out.
Sure. I would love to see, though, Jared, if you could find the, you know, when we do our deep dive into Nemesis, which is definitely on the horizon, if you can find the that ad and then figure out the lines that they did, that didn't make it into the film. I'd be really interested to hear that.
Yes, I hope I hope my memory is serving me well. I'll double check that. Nemesis is the only Star Trek movie I only ever saw once, so I may be wrong, but we'll double check.
Wow.
Now, the other thing I want to say, you're talking about the popularity of this speech, is there's a callback to this on, I think it's the second or third to last episode of Deep Space Nine, where Quark is getting all upset with his brother Rom becoming the Grand Nagus. And he says, the line must be drawn here, this bar no further.
And, oh, that's right.
That's fantastic.
Where he's spoofing Picard. And that it, very much like having Rick Berman mention Khan Singh, have Quark riff on this famous speech from Picard is delightful.
Yeah.
Anyway, anything else on First Contact?
I think that pretty much covers it. It's one of the fan favorites because it's just like Picard unleashed.
Yeah. That, if it were a comic book, that's what the cover would say. Picard unleashed. Also, Alfre Woodard, she is such a good actor. She's such a good actress.
Oh yeah, she's awesome.
She's on the Luke Cage series that dropped on Netflix a little while ago, and she's just a gem every scene she's in.
They were very lucky to get her for Star Trek.
Absolutely. Okay, so next one, I think this is, you might be most fans' favorite Picard speech.
Well, yeah, I was actually wondering if we should save that till the end.
Yeah, let's save that. We'll save that. Yeah, you're right. Sorry, it's my fault.
Because we have one more after this.
So the next one is also from a movie. This is Picard's sort of plaintive speech at the end of Star Trek Generations. So here, let's play that for the audience now.
I'm gonna miss this ship. She went before her time.
Someone once told me that time was a predator that stalked us all our lives. But I rather believe that time is a companion who goes with us on the journey, reminds us to cherish every moment, because it'll never come again. What we leave behind is not as important as how we've lived. After all, number one, we're only mortal.
Speak for yourself, sir. I plan to live forever.
Okay, now, Kayla, you'd wanted to include this. What is it that you notably like about this speech?
Well, yeah, like as you guys know, and our listeners would know who have heard our Generations Deep Dive episode, I am the endless defender of this very flawed film, just because I like it so much. But I think this is probably one of the coolest gems that came out of Generations. And of course, when he says someone once told me, he's referring, of course, to the movie's Soren. Villain who earlier, Soren, who earlier tells him that time is a predator. And it's, you know, as you go through life and time seems to, you know, get a little bit quicker as we get older and things change so quickly around us. It's kind of cool to think of this this idea that, you know, time is a companion that goes with you on the journey, you know, and more important than what you've left behind is how you lived. So just like sort of cherishing the moments that you have, but not because time is fighting you, you know, not feeling like you have to be in this never-ending battle.
Something I've talked about when we've gone into deep dives in movies is what frequently happens and what I think should happen for most PG-13 action-adventure movies, like most of the Star Trek movies fit into, is the hero in the beginning hears the stated theme of the movie and doesn't really get it, and then in the end, he or she repeats it, and the process of the adventure we've gone through has learned the lesson, right? And so Soren says to him at the beginning, time is the fire in which we burn, and Picard doesn't really get it. And then by the end, he does. He's learned this lesson, and here he is repeating the theme. Mm-hmm. So I think this is an instance where that works pretty well in one of the Star Trek movies.
I agree.
I also think, you know, he gives Riker the cute little line about we're only mortal, and then Riker says, speak for yourself, I plan on living forever, which is wonderfully cheeky for Riker at the time.
Yeah, and it's also another thing where it lightens the mood a little bit, right?
Yeah,
the movie
you don't want to go out on a down note. And then, of course, Picard says, you know, I'm because Riker says, oh, I always thought I'd get a shot at this chair, meaning the captain's chair, because this is after the Enterprise had crashed. And yeah. Picard says something like, "I for some reason, I don't think this will be the last ship to have the name Enterprise. So this is,
yeah. Wink, wink.
Yeah, wink. See you next year, guys.
Although there's a line in First Contact, which I wish they'd put here to be the funny zinger, where he says, there are plenty of letters left in the alphabet. I think
that's yeah,
the
yeah.
way to end.
Yeah.
Yeah, but this is good. This is something, Kayla, like you mentioned, that I think about every now and again. Of course, is you know, time only goes in one direction, and this is a good way to help not get too upset about it.
Right, yeah. So I also thought it was a nice moment. It's not one of Picard's more like classic Picard-y type speeches. It's just like sort of a quick little wrap up for the film. But I really like it, so thought I'd include it.
Yeah, no, yeah, good inclusion. Absolutely. I would not have thought of that, so I'm glad you did. Okay, well now I guess we'll get to our number one. Brian, do you want to set this one up for us, please?
Sure. I think to a lot of people, this is probably not only a quintessential Star Trek speech, but it's probably a quintessential Star Trek episode. Mm. The Measure of a Man, a second season episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, where a gentleman named Commander Maddox wants to take Data apart. The idea being that, you know, yeah, Data is a machine, he's not alive, and they want to take him apart, essentially to turn him into breeding stock so they can make an entire race of Datas.
Mm-hmm.
The question becomes, is Data actually a sentient being?
Mm-hmm.
And if so, then you're violating his personal liberties and freedoms by doing that to him. So this ends up in a courtroom, a dramatic courtroom scene, and ultimately ends with this unbelievable summation about rights and liberty, which is delivered by Captain Picard, which we will play for you right now.
You see, he's met two of your three criteria for sentience, so what if he meets the third? Consciousness, in even the smallest degree. What is he then? I don't know. Do you?
Do you? Do you? Well, that's the question you have to answer. Your Honor, a courtroom is a crucible. In it we burn away irrelevancies until we are left with a pure product, the truth, for all time. Now, sooner or later, this man, or others like him, will succeed in replicating Commander Data. Now, the decision you reach here today will determine how we will regard this creation of our genius. It will reveal the kind of a people we are, what he is destined to be. It will reach far beyond this courtroom and this one android. It could significantly redefine the boundaries of personal liberty and freedom, expanding them for some, savagely curtailing them for others. Are you prepared to condemn him and all who come after him to servitude and slavery? Your Honor, Starfleet was founded to seek out new life. Well, there it sits, waiting. You wanted a chance to make law. Well, here it is. Make it a good one.
All right, guys. So, I mean, Measure of a Man, what else is there to say about it? I mean, it's just amazing.
I had asked you guys not to tell me what your favorite Picard speech is until we got on the air and started recording. But I'm imagining we're all going to say the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, this was a no-brainer.
Yeah.
It's also the one that I think
it's so Star Trek-y.
Not only is it so Star Trek-y, it's so speechy, because some of them they're actually more dialogues, especially the one like from Man of Time.
Yeah.
But this one, I mean, that right here is a speech. And honestly, I think that's one of the reasons why writers like doing courtroom dramas, is because it's a really easy way to give a character an opportunity to give a speech, right? I think it's
because that's literally what the lawyer is doing, right, when they're making their closing arguments.
Yep.
Right.
Or the witness.
And they have a lot more leeway, you know, in closing arguments in terms of things that they're allowed to say compared to the rest of the court, the rest of the trial. So would anyone else like to have Picard be their lawyer if they ever need one?
That would be okay with me.
Oh, hell yeah.
That would be okay.
But the best moment, right, in the speech is when he's like, you know, do you know what happens then? Meaning if he meets these three criteria for consciousness, for sentience, including consciousness, even to a small degree. What then? I don't know. Yeah. Do you? And then he points to everyone in the room. Do you? Do you?
Yeah.
Your Honor, Riker, do you? Riker. Yeah, and it's just like, yeah. It's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, he really gets a head of steam at the end.
I love
I would take Jean-Luc Picard as my lawyer anytime. I mean, sure. Talk about courtroom presence.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also love the phrase savagely curtailing. I have used that line before in stuff that I've written. It's because savage is, you know, a very savage word, but curtailing is a very fancy word, and so to put those two together is just wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Yeah, it makes it more powerful somehow.
And the thing is, you know, I was thinking about this episode the other day. I watched this YouTube video called Humans Need Not Apply about the advances in cybernetics that not only are coming in the next few years, but have already come. And I'm like, the first time that a robot gets a lawyer, they're going to talk about this episode of Star Trek.
We laugh, but there's probably some truth to that.
Yeah, probably. Anyway, fantastic.
Someday.
Episode. Someday. Sooner than we realize.
I love that Picard uses kind of two arguments here. You know, he uses the one argument saying, look, he might be a sentient being, and so we owe him these rights, you know, whether, you know, even though we're not sure, we owe him these rights in case he is. But he also uses the other argument of what happens when we have, you know, thousands and thousands of Datas who's created a race. And he said, you know, he sort of looks at the judge and says, you know, look, Your Honor, if you have 1,000 of these people running around, and now, you know, could that be considered a race? I don't know. I can't answer the question. But because there's a question of that, you know, some people are going to think we should be treating them as such, you know, so that you know, a massive deactivating them would be a genocide, and now they're going to want to claim rights. So it's sort of like, you are responsible, Your Honor, for opening this door, opening this Pandora's box. If you let him do that, you know, you're responsible for how this race of beings is treated in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he has a conversation with Guinan about that, too, before he goes into his closing remarks, I guess.
That's a very chilling conversation, the way she kind of leads him into it.
Yeah, she does. Well, and the other thing is, I mean, she explicitly uses the word slavery, and this episode was just a couple years after Whoopi Goldberg had starred in The Color Purple, and so I think they're kind of doing a little callback to that. And the fact that they have, you know... An African-American person say slavery, I don't think that was incidental.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great episode. I want to go watch that episode right now.
I think I might after we do
this. It's so good. It's just so good.
All right, well, there
is a quintessential Star Trek episode.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
There's a Voyager where they do a similar thing with the Doctor, to the point where they even have like a courtroom scene at the end. It doesn't work a tenth as well as this episode does.
Yeah. I mean, when Gene read this speech, he must have been smiling from ear to ear. This is like so Roddenberry.
Yep. It's sort of the opposite of the, Brian, what you've said, of the Kirk talking a computer down. Here we have Picard talking a person down on behalf of a computer.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's so true.
Yep.
Righty. Well, there.
Good analogy there.
Thank you. Well, I've been paying attention. I have good teachers. So now, are there any honorable mentions? Picard speeches we don't necessarily want to go into, we don't have time for, but that we should mention as well.
Oh boy!
Oh gosh! I'm sure there are a ton of them out there.
Okay. Now the one that I would like to mention, but we don't really want to go into in detail, is at the very end of Darmok, where he comes and the speech he gives is all the mythological phrases that he learned from Captain Dathan on the planet there.
And
everyone on the Enterprise bridge is looking at him like he's crazy.
And he gives this amazing speech that again saves the day non-violently, and no one knows what he's talking about.
That's one of my favorite episodes of TNG.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that's also a terrific speech, a very, very non-traditional one. Anyway, all right, okay, so now, and if Picard, this would be my final question here today. If Picard is the best speech giver in all of Trek, who would be the number two? Who's the number two best speech giver?
I think I have to give it to Kirk.
Okay. Yeah, Kirk.
Okay. Yeah.
Because he's so yeah. entertaining. William Shatner is so entertaining to listen to when he's giving a speech.
And if you had rewritten parts of Measure of a Man for Shatner, he could have read this thing too.
And it would have been a totally different feel. You know, it would have had a totally different energy to the scene because they're just two very different actors and two very different characters.
Yeah, but you could totally see Kirk reading this thing.
Uh-huh. It'd be great to get him to do that.
Don't you? I could. I mean, you'd have to rewrite it slightly, but I feel Kirk could definitely read the Measure of a Man speech.
Yeah. Yeah, good point. Yeah, we got to get him to do that at a convention.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, the only speeches
on the wish list
at conventions nowadays are for Priceline.com.
Yeah.
But yeah, Kirk. I have to agree with Kayla. It's got to be Kirk.
Yeah. Alrighty. Well, there you have it. Top Picard speeches. Shuttlepod episode 26. Thank you for coming along with this journey. Thanks to those of you who've lasted this long. We appreciate you.
Yeah.
And be sure to, you know, like, share, subscribe, follow us on Twitter, all that good internet stuff that the kids talk about these days. And we will see you for episode 27. Bye, everybody.
See you next time, guys.
Bye.